Good evening. This is Forum, CIUT's community access program, heard every evening from 6:15 to 7 p.m. CIUT is a community access radio station, and Forum is devoted to lesser-heard groups and individuals in the community. Because CIUT does not exercise editorial control over this program, the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of CIUT or its staff.
Good evening, I'm Liz Armstrong with Joni Manchi for the Wall Street Journal. Welcome to this week's edition of the Wall Street Journal, a regular broadcast on CIUT-FM. This program is produced by a collective of community members who support holistic and complementary approaches to health and well-being. Our goal is to help develop public awareness about the choices we have in our approach to getting and staying well. Please join us for the next 45 minutes to find out how you and your family can enhance your health and well-being. On our program tonight, co-host Joni Manchi provides us with two interviews, one with Chandler Kevin Dobson and another with Carolyn Dean and her husband Bob, a Toronto broadcaster and media consultant, on the topic of media ecology connection to holistic medicine. Lucy Meckler and Evelyn Rotenberg offer us a restaurant review of the Original Bakery Cafe, and Murray King brings us up to date on what's new in the world of health. We also have our regular Wall Street Journal calendar of events, so please stay tuned. Now here's Joni Manchi.
There is the English channel. There are radio and TV channels. And then there are spirit channels. Kevin Dobson of Inner Light Awareness is a channel for the spirit entity Dr. Jameson. Now, this is not your average run-of-the-mill profession, and not...
speaking with you today.
No,
and
welcome.
Dr. Jameson, too.
Thank you for having me here.
Wherever he is, yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sounds great to me, too. Next on the Wall Street Journal, Joni Manchi with Carolyn and Bob Dean. Now here's Joni with Carolyn and Bob Dean.
Carolyn and Bob. Media ecology connection to holistic medicine. Now, Carolyn, you're our holistic dean here, and Bob is our media ecology dean.
Mm-hmm. Media ecologist, yes.
Yes. I was just making a little pun there.
Okay. That's a right hemisphere activity.
Oh, yes. Well.
Suitable for the acoustic nature of the electric medium of radio. I'd like to start off pointing out how interesting I find the effects of the electric environment on Carolyn's clientele, her patient profile.
And she's holistically based. She has holistic...
That's her reputation, and she attracts people who want that kind of treatment. And I find it interesting to know that the electric environment wakes up the right hemisphere, which is that part of the brain which has been established by certain scientists. Maybe they don't all agree, but some say it is a holistic pattern. There's a holistic bias in the right hemisphere of our brains. The electric environment is holistic and biased towards the right hemisphere.
You believe that the electric environment is?
Yeah, if you understand the characteristics of the electric environment as dealing with a simultaneous environment, an environment where figure-ground interplay happens, where it's hard to pin down categories, there's more of a process going on, it's a way of... approaching the environment, and since you tune in rather than look at. So it's
your
a
auditory.
Musical,
your auditory.
It's a musical relationship the electric environment evokes, not just by the content of the electric environment, but the form of the electric environment is acoustic in nature. It's simultaneous. It comes at you from all directions. You have to dance with it.
How do you awaken that?
You mean how do you become aware
mm-hmm.
of it? That's happening?
Mm-hmm. Especially if you're being very left brain. If you're trying to stimulate your right brain, and if it's holistically based and you're wanting to stimulate that.
You have to know the electric environment does stimulate and brings the right hemisphere back into dominance. If you understand the characteristics of the right hemisphere, and then you see that evokes those characteristics in the electric environment, and the electric environment has already evoked those characteristics by its nature, so there's an interplay between the right hemisphere and the environment. You have to believe that the environment affects us.
Mm-hmm.
The left hemisphere tradition is quite a detached view that doesn't see that the environment affects us.
Mm-hmm.
When you move into the right hemisphere, you see that the electric environment does, any environment interacts with people. This is the wisdom of the Orient, the native cultures of the third world. The ones that did not get damaged by the bias of the phonetic alphabet. Not that the phonetic alphabet is a complete disservice. It had many services.
So how did it do that?
It took meaningless signs and sounds. You know, when the Greeks started to write with the phonetic alphabet,
mm-hmm.
it took meaningless signs and sounds and used them as an abstract ground for communication.
To relate to whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whereas previous scripts, ideogrammic, iconographic, syllabic scripts, they did not have an abstract base. They related directly to the sound that was being communicated. In other words, the symbol matched in tune with the sound.
So we're trying to get back to that in an electric environment.
We are back there. The problem is we have a left hemisphere baggage, the industrial environment, the visually biased environment.
So how do we balance that to get you know, more in tune with our holistic base?
Well, we're not, the thing I find in Carolyn's practice that's interesting is that the conflict, the schizophrenic situation that's set up where in the Western world children are educated in a left hemisphere form, but they're already inclined towards a right hemisphere experience ever since television came into our homes.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a conflict between the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere. In holistic medicine, which takes a right hemisphere approach to the body, that style, that method, will become more popular as long as we keep the electric environment as our main form of communication.
That's our focus. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Right. Now, the problem is, though, there's a whole baggage of previous approaches, the classifying scientific left hemisphere approach, which has made many discoveries and has created many services. But if people are caught between these two modes, how can they make a decision which mode they want to do, which one they want
to do? How do they?
They usually plunge into one or the other fanatically.
Mm-hmm. Or I try to tell people to educate themselves on both aspects so that they can make a proper choice.
And you find that with people coming to your practice?
Yes.
As patients, they're needing
right
more information.
Oh, definitely. But right from dyslexia with children who... I can see that they go to school, they're taught the alphabet, and they either express a visual bias or an acoustic bias. A lot of the dyslexic, I think, have an acoustic bias. You'll hear parents say, well, he hears everything I say, and he seems to have a great memory, but when it comes to reading something or writing it down, he just can't cope, and therefore is being put in dyslexic class or learning mm-hmm. disabled class. And it may be just that the electric environment is stronger for him. Watching so much TV, kids might have a bias in their right hemisphere through the electric environment and not be tuned in enough to the literate
alphabet. What do you do for children then, Carolyn?
Well, there are lots of things. McLuhan talked about with children using trampolines to help tune their eye, hand, motor skills. There are practitioners that do brain balancing. It's
how do they do that?
Well, it's measuring the right and left hemisphere and how they interact. It's hard to describe over the electric medium of radio, but it's energy balancing and doing certain exercises that use both sides of the brain simultaneously, so that you exercise the old corpus callosum.
So there is a practice involved, practicing exercises and disciplining.
But the fact is, there is something to be done for it.
And the reason that boys seem to be the victims of dyslexia more than girls.
I wasn't aware of that.
Oh, yeah. In much of the studies, it shows that boys are the majority of the sufferers of this problem. And because television looks at you rather than you looking at television, in the sense that the cathode ray tube fires energy at you, it's light through rather than light on, it paralyzes the eye muscles. All right. Now, girls do traditionally knitting, cooking, and sewing. These kind of activities
require
they used to. And maybe they should come back, because it'll save the girls who will be able to handle the right hemisphere environment.
Yes, and ironing too.
Right.
Something I better learn.
These kind of activities foster eye movement, delicate eye movement, and so the girls are trained in certain activities that are counter to the paralyzing effect of television on their eye muscles. Boys do baseball, hockey. There's not that kind of delicate focusing of the eye. So they found that the majority of prisoners in a Denver, Colorado penitentiary were dyslexic.
Well, actually, my last two dyslexic patients were girls, so I don't think anyone's doing the cooking or sewing anymore.
Well, that's because the right hemisphere environment has taken over, and those kind of activities even have obliterated the traditional
distinction between
men and boys. I mean, boys and girls.
Well, there is a distinction, let me tell you. Well, that's great. I really appreciate talking to you both about this.
Well, it's an interesting concept. Not many people are looking at it.
A concept, percept.
Oh, yes, the concept is a solid
thing. And there's a difference. You want to explain the difference between the percept and the concept.
Well, I'd say the difference is that you have a lot of people who have a preference for holistic medicine and don't know the ground of their perception has been biased into a right hemisphere need because of an electric environment that has a right hemisphere quality.
So they don't have an understanding.
They haven't heard about that.
And I find knowing about it helps me, because I can step back a bit and detach from getting so involved in what's going on here and this, what's the chaos in this world these days, and realize what.
So you have a detachment.
Yeah. That's the treatment I find for people, is that they should learn about it, recognize it, be able to detach and sit back and say, oh yeah, that's the electric effect. And by knowing that, they won't get so involved and think that it's
falling
their
apart.
Problem. You know, most people, when they feel something's wrong, blame themselves, and should really realize what's going on out there in the environment, the larger environment, so that they can, not to blame it, but just to understand it.
And in counter groups, in that phenomenon, people find out they have the same problems often. They individualize it, but there's a common framework. Now, we could look at the need for countergroups in the 60s and 70s was an effect of the television medium.
Good. Well, I am going to be going out there, guys, and watching all these little electric images on me and see how they affect me. All righty. Well, thank you. Carolyn, Bob.
Thank you, Joni.
Well, I'll tell you, Liz. Needlepoint and ironing are definitely out for me, but I'm sure going to be more aware of what's bombarding me out there in this electric environment.
Needlepoint and ironing were never my forte. But next, news from the world of health.
General practitioner in Toronto. She talked with Joni Manchi about the relationship she feels does not exist between holistic and conventional medicine.
There is a dilemma in medicine today. Patients feel the need of a doctor who will attend to their whole body. They do not see themselves chopped up into specialist parts. Holistic doctors have begun to fill this gap for people by being all things to all people. Carolyn, you are a holistic general practitioner.
And you function in both mediums, conventional medicine and holistic medicine, and you're very scientifically based. How does that work for you in your practice?
I find it works very well. I think I'm able to hold the concept that a person can do this, therefore I'm able to do it. A lot of people seem to hold the concept that it's impossible to be both, to do conventional medicine and to do natural medicine.
What is natural medicine for you? What aspects are you interested in?
Well, natural medicine, I guess I use that word more than holistic, because I think of the joke someone told me once that holistic spelled with a W is whole, W-H-O-L-istic, but holistic, H-O-L-I-S-T-I-C, conjures up the holy aspect of medicine. So I tend to stay away from the word. Natural medicine to me means anything that a person can use that doesn't have side effects up to the point of using drugs or surgery. So it can be talk therapy, it can be herbal therapy, Bach flower remedies, homeopathy, vitamins, minerals, diet therapy, anything that is quote-unquote natural. People have problems trying to identify the different therapies these days because there are so many. But I think it's incumbent upon doctors to align themselves either with illness care or wellness care and to make it known. We go to medical school to learn the diagnosis and treatment of illness and disease, which is fine. I really appreciated my education, and I fall back on it every day. But the natural medicine doctors, naturopathic doctors, and patients now seem to want a doctor who will guide them in wellness. So
you don't think that's occurring in conventional medicine?
Oh, no.
They treat illness.
Yeah, they treat illness
problem.
And disease, and, mm-hmm. and really the mandate is not to treat wellness or not to guide a person in wellness. I mean, we have enough trouble as a conventional doctor. There is enough disease out there to only specialize in that.
There's a lot of history in conventional mm-hmm. medicine. They really...
Well, ever since the wars. I mean, what happened with the First and Second World War were the discovery of the antibiotics, the sulfur drugs, and it became the hallmark of medicine to find a disease that the drug would treat. Osteopathy was big back then, homeopathy was big, but the medical schools running those programs were bought out by the drug companies, mm-hmm. and we went into disease-oriented
medicine. Very lucrative business.
Yeah. So there is a discrepancy, but I think we can pull it together. It is difficult, though. I do talk to a lot of medical students and doctors who seem to be interested in doing some forms of natural medicine, but they're always overwhelmed by the amount of work that's necessary.
There's a huge bombardment.
Yeah, to study both aspects.
There's so much information out there.
Yeah.
It's only so much time.
Yeah.
That's
I think what medicine needs to do is have some interest and information about the natural therapies, enough at least to be able to refer properly to mm-hmm. doctors that practice natural medicine or to chiropractors or naturopaths, because the patients are definitely demanding this. They see all the information out on the media about our...
They're becoming more informed, aren't they?
Becoming more
mm-hmm.
informed, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Patients know more about nutrition than most doctors do.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening in the doctor realm is we have the specialists now in the
How
doctors.
How do you feel about the specialists?
Well, I don't mean specialists in certain diseases, but it's a specialist area, medicine.
That's what I mean.
And these mm-hmm. this day and age, where we are more holistically inclined, we tend to be generalists. People use their perceptions more, their percepts. They don't deal in concepts, in black and white. They perceive what's happening. They want a full picture from their doctor. A doctor just deals in sort of a blinders-on specialist category, sees their right kidney or their left kidney, and leaves the rest of the body mm-hmm. alone.
Oh, I agree with that to a certain extent, but there has to be some place for a specialist, because as a general practitioner, you can't be all things to all people and have all the information that we're being bombarded with medically, other than medically, we're being bombarded with new information so quickly these days. You can't learn everything and take care of that person properly.
But I think it's a GP is probably more important than a specialist, because as a GP you have to know what specialist to send
yes,
a person to.
Yes, I agree.
Mm-hmm. If you have a person that has a generalized syndrome and you send them to the wrong specialist, they may be told, oh no, you don't have anything, which gives everybody the false impression that
that they're okay.
But they also feel like a bouncing ball when they're shoved from specialist to specialist. There's,
right.
There doesn't seem to be any integration.
Right. It is very difficult. I'm finding now with Epstein-Barr and with candidiasis, this overgrowth of yeast that people seem to have, chronic stress, just dietary problems. Mm-hmm. People come in with so many complaints in all systems that I think it must be very difficult unless you have some index of suspicion that a person could be suffering from one multi-system complaint.
And unless you're aware of those symptoms as a doctor, you wouldn't recognize them as such.
No. And that's where the patient education is so important. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of work with the Candida Foundation, and we have a public information library where people can...
What do you do? Where is that?
That's at 598 St. Clair Avenue West on the third floor.
That's marvelous.
And people can join the library. It's the only one we know of its kind. People can join the library, sit there, read all the books, look up diseases, and try to figure out what they can do for themselves and also help educate their doctors. I have patients coming in to me and saying, well, I think I have this. What do you think? And we work together
on it.
That's
wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. It's important because a person is their best advocate for themselves. Mm-hmm. They know more about themselves than any doctor ever will. So they have to be aware of that and express that.
So there has to be a communication set up and appreciation for what the patient is saying. And, and often there's very little time. Doctors are so overworked and overloaded. Mm-hmm. To sit and spend that time with the patient, it doesn't happen.
No, often. Unfortunately, in our fee-for-service OHIP system, a doctor can be paid the same amount of money for 2 minutes as 15 minutes.
Yes.
So the likelihood is you'll spend 2 minutes.
Instead of 15.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And as a holistic doctor, are you covered by OHIP, or are there sections that you are and aren't?
Oh, no, I'm covered by OHIP. Mm-hmm. I guess the unfortunate thing is, though, I don't take on new patients. I have a full patient load, and I mainly just take consults now from other doctors who are sending me people to try to figure out difficult problems. They consider difficult problems, but the way you can look at a series of complaints in a, I guess, a holistic fashion, I find that I can get to the bottom of a lot of people's problems.
Mm-hmm. And how do you feel about creating a clearing for conventional medicine and holistic practitioners, to create a marriage of some sort?
Well, it's very important, but I think it has to come from the natural medicine doctors doing more research. First of all, we have to get funding for research.
Very little funding available.
Very little funding, but we have to do it. I mean, it's incumbent upon us to prove what we're doing. I do think.
You're really scientifically based, too. What are you doing in that area, too?
Well, I've been getting so many consults regarding candidiasis and food allergies and bowel problems. I've been doing some laboratory testing in my office
on
my patients.
Mm-hmm.
They're immunoglobulin tests for candidiasis and food allergy antibody tests and tests that determine the actual permeability of the gut. Because the bottom line for a lot of people may be that their gut is overloaded with yeast or an imbalance of intestinal bacteria, and this creates irritation and then permeability or holes in the intestinal wall, which allows these organisms to get into the bloodstream.
And they're absorbed directly.
Right, and we determine that by finding antibodies to those bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
High levels of antibodies tells us a number of things about the health of the colon.
Mm-hmm.
So these tests are very scientifically based and read by computer, etc., etc., and I like to base my practice on this to a large extent, because we have to, as I said, natural medicine can't keep saying, well, anecdotally this happens, or I had one case of this and this is what I did, so I think everybody should do it.
Yeah.
I don't think we can do that.
Do you document your results?
Yeah, it's very difficult. I have a real backlog. I keep a lot of questionnaires and keep all my records, but it takes me ages to keep up with all the paperwork.
Mm-hmm. I would think so.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I really appreciate this interview. It's great
Thank
to speak
you.
To you, and I'm real happy to find somebody who's holistically based and operating in conventional medicine very completely.
Thank you very much, Joni.
Thanks, Carolyn.
Thank you very much, Joni and Carolyn.
And this is Lucy Meckler
and Joni Manchi
with the Well Street Journal. Stay with us for the next 45 minutes to find out how you and your family can achieve health and well-being. Well Street Journal brings you interviews with...
This show, we are going to hear from Dr. Peter Valius about exciting new work with teeth implants. Dr. Carolyn and Bob Dean will tell us all about body-mind percepts in the electric environment. And we'll listen to a chat between our two roving restaurant reviewers, Lucy Meckler and Evelyn Rotenberg. The electric environment we live in, with its language of acoustic interplay, is making us very disconnected. Stay tuned.
Dr. Carolyn Dean, a Toronto-based holistic general practitioner, and her husband Bob Dean, a Toronto broadcaster and media consultant, speak with our own Joni Manchi about body-mind percepts in the electrical environment.
Bob Dylan said, "Something is happening here, but you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Jones?" There is certainly something happening in our world, and fortunately we are getting closer to understanding what it is. We perceive it every minute of every day, but the concept eludes us. What I'm talking about is the electric environment that we live in. Just as the fish swimming in water have no idea of their environment, we are totally immersed in an electric surround, the effects of which are invisible to us and ignored by us. As a concept on an intellectual level, we either do not or cannot conceive that this new environment affects us. Literate man lives by classification detachment, where he acts without reacting. Carolyn and Bob Dean, tell me about it. What are we talking about? You said this.
Yes, Bob and I wrote the article, and then I presented a paper at a women's conference in May, and it was quite well received because I think a lot of people realize that the electric environment has some effect. In every critique you read of a book or any nuance, any fad, anything that's happening these days, it seems they're missing the point.
And what is the point?
Point is the ground. Now, we use the word percept to refer to our direct experience, which can't be replayed or repeated. Concept refers to experience that can be repeated or replayed verbally, mentally, in some form.
Mm-hmm.
The speed that the electric environment communicates to everybody creates a ground of fragmentation and implosion at the same time.
And what do you call the electric environment? What is the electric environment to you?
The electric environment is any environment that has the effect of simultaneity.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's the electric environment, starting with the telegraph, moving up to telephone, then the environment of radio, the environment of television, that of computers and satellites.
Mm-hmm.
The common denominator is that the users of that environment are in touch and experiencing it all at the same time.
And
no matter where they are in the globe.
Yes, and maybe not even being aware of that.
Yeah, they're aware of it, but it's not pointed out as a factor that they lived in an environment before that didn't have that simultaneity.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the old percept, the mechanical environment, the pre-electric environment.
And how did people operate in the mechanical environment?
Largely in the West, at the beginning when Gutenberg started the printing technology, the printing press, people could then read privately, silently. At first they didn't read silently, that happened later, but they could read and separate themselves into an individualistic mode and read the printed page, whereas before print, everybody communicated by voice, gesture, dance, bells, and a lot of multisensual activity. So the isolating nature of the visual effect of print, you use your eyes and only your eyes, set up a dynamic in the Western world of individualism and group uniformity based mm-hmm. on visual clues. So that went on for 300, 400 years, and it was enhanced under the industrial environment, steam and rail, the structures of the cities and nations were built on a lineal, horizontal, and vertical, mainly a vertical organization situation of bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm.
But once the telephone came in, then someone could communicate at any level of the bureaucracy and bypass the normal visual channels, visual means of step-by-step communication, the
and
memo
that,
process.
And that transition, what did it do to us?
It altered our concepts. It altered our social relationships, our business relationships, our work and play relationships, and our sense of our place in the universe.
And where did they end up? Well, how are we doing that?
Well, what happened when Copernicus started describing the sun-centered universe, where the Earth was spun to the edges mm-hmm. of the solar system and the universe, that was an effect of the fragmenting and visual space under Gutenberg conditions. When electric environment came in, it threw man back into the center of the universe because everybody could be instantly in touch with each other.
Yes, so there's much higher communication.
Not higher, mm-hmm. more faster and simultaneous. We don't like to put value judgments on it. Just it's perceptually, qualitatively different.
The fact that people are talking about telepathy, their trance channels, everyone seems to have an awareness of ESP may in fact be the result of the electric environment putting us all together. One of the descriptions of how we are in the electric environment can be as we are on the telephone. We have no bodies. Our voice communicates disembodied to the other person.
It's just all auditory.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But it's simultaneous in the sense if you had a conference call from cities all around the world, then your presence is in every one of those places. Their presence is
That's
there.
Right.
And the others listening in are part of it. So you can't really visualize that in a normal center margin, center boundary situation. Everybody's in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And that middle is hard to visualize where it is.
Does that create problems for us as well?
Well,
in my medical practice, I can see the problems on the nervous system. If we consider that all media are extensions of our bodies, everything that we create or work with is an extension of us, we consider that the electric environment is an extension of our nervous systems. If our nervous systems are that close to our skin, then that can be interpreted as very irritating for some people.
Or weakening. If we're being bombarded.
It may mean that our whole skin is taking in information and that creates this bombardment or over-exaggeration of input. Some people can't handle this extra input, have to shut down. In shutting down on a physical level, they could be creating problems.
They get ill. And they could create illness.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would think so.
No, to respond, you're talking about the problems between the skin, the body, and we just established earlier the discarnate, the disembodied state. How does one visualize mm-hmm. what they are? Look at the stress on your... On what
right,
are you connected to? What are
sure,
you separated from?
Sure.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. On one hand, we're saying we're disembodied, we're angels, we're floating around with no bodies. At the same time, we can have a sense of our body is super extended, and that creates a real conflict.
Because you're relating to other previous environments, the mechanical environment, which dehumanized the body, the electric environment superhumanized. The mechanical environment's still here, and then you have natural environments and pre-literate environments.
Yeah,
and
it'd be very confusing, I would think. How would we strengthen our central nervous system to handle that?
Becoming aware of the conflicting percepts or images that are looking for a concept in those different situations.
There would have to be something more than awareness, I would think.
I don't know what more there can be. I know.
Other than media ecology. That is a new discipline founded by Marshall McLuhan, mm-hmm. and unfortunately nobody's really begun to think about it.
And media ecology, how do you explain that?
That would be that if we understood the effects of television on the population, and especially it creates drug addiction, as a response to the inner trip that television and the electric environment takes you on. And it retrieves the occult also. All these effects conflict with the Western tradition and other value systems that were established in previous environments. If we were aware of the trauma that causes for people of all ages, then we might want to have a six-month media fast or television fast.
Mm-hmm.
As in,
that's an exciting concept. It really is.
Yeah, now some people say they've tried it in small towns.
I've been on one for a year.
Yeah, you've done it. But one thing, even if you go up north or go to Tierra del Fuego, you're still inside the satellite environment, which is having effect.
Oh, I see what you mean. Not just staying away from the boob tube. You're just getting away from any vibratory.
Television is one environment we could turn off, and people have tried it. There have been experiments in towns in Europe and in the United States. People volunteer for a month or so, and they really get in trouble. They try to have no TV in their family for a month, and they go through all the symptoms of cold turkey or drug addiction symptoms.
Withdrawal.
Well, you know, it's really a personal experience. I have not watched television for a year. My television has not been on. I think I've maybe caught the news twice in the last year, and only because I've been so busy with
but
my life, I have
content.
Not missed it.
The news is the content. It's important, but we like to point out that you may not be using television, but there's a majority of people are using it, and you have to interact with people who are using it.
Yes.
In that regard, Becker's work that I refer to a lot, he does talk about the fact that our body is vibrating at around 8 hertz. The Earth has certain vibratory rates that are natural to it.
And what are they?
Approximately. Well, I think it's below 8 hertz.
Yes.
And there are different ones. You'd have to check the book just to confirm the different rates. But what happens with the electric vibratory rates, that they're all over the map, and they can be either neutralizing our vibratory rate or running at right angles to the Earth's vibratory rate and creating a whole jumbling of our senses.
So there's some confusion there.
Yeah, well, if you think about it, all the animals react. We know how birds have a magnetic pull to send them places, and fish go upstream when they should, and pigeons go in a certain direction when they should and where they should, and it's all by magnetic signal they get from the Earth. And if that signal is upset, which, I mean, there are a lot of experiments to prove this, then they don't do what they're supposed to. So our pituitary glands, our endocrine systems, our hormonal systems are all being affected by this vibratory rate.
Now
this is a whole different aspect of, this is sort of the actual physical aspect.
This would be the disservices of the electric environment on the physiology,
on the physiology level. Now, what would you do as a doctor, Carolyn, when you see this occurring in your patients? They come in, and I'm sure you identify it when it comes.
Well, I know. When you asked earlier, what can we do about it? Unfortunately, there's no pill or vitamin or supplement to take that away.
No, I mean, with the endocrine system, they come in.
I know people
and overloaded.
And there's a high infertility rate. Has that anything to do with the electric environment? I don't have an answer. I mean, some people are saying that we should wear watches or wear instruments that vibrate at our body's 8 hertz so that we can sort of buffer ourselves and put ourselves in a little cocoon. I don't know. I think people do have to start looking at what can be done. I know in North America, the levels of electric pollution are set hundreds of times higher than in Russia. In Russia, they've realized that this can be a problem and have lowered the levels of
they the, have.
Oh, yeah, their microwave radiation and everything. Mm. They're not allowed to be above a certain level, and we're allowing them hundreds of times above that, mostly for our military.
So we really have to just get out there and talk about it and make...
First to make it a larger issue, it's not that you want to make it a new obsession, but there are services and disservices of any new environment. And Carolyn's pointing out some of the disservices on the material cause level, but there is the formal cause, and there is the final cause and the efficient causality. These four traditional philosophical causes could be a way of looking at and getting a handle on the process we're involved in. Now, a new book has come out, Marshall McLuhan's last manuscript, called The Laws of Media, the New Science. And that illustrates the process in tetrad form. There's four levels to the tetrad. And to get it, the tetrad is a new perceptual metaphor for people to get a handle on how to get a dialogue going and maybe develop it up to the level of a collective consensus about what we're doing and take responsibility about
our
new environment.
There's more awareness.
As well as the pollutions resulting from the old industrial environment and their effects on nature, the old
pre-literate and pre-industrial environment, but there's this new environment that nobody's talking about. So media ecology would include all the various environments we've created in the various phases.
And looking at it in totality.
Mm-hmm. And not as something that we know the answers to, but certainly to explore it.
Great. Last word, guys?
I referred to Becker's book. It's the title is The Body Electric.
And I'd say that a very little known experiment by Mr. Krugman at General Electric in 1969-70 showed that television does alter the brain and moves into an alpha state, making the user of television more relaxed, more passive, and more unfocused. You can see a lot of the popularity of meditation in Oriental or third world forms of religion or ritual could be a reflex reaction to the effect of television.
Well, we're just going to have you back to continue this. And thank you very much, Carolyn and Bob. Dynamic Dean duo.
Thank you, Joni.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Well, Lucy, I know that I could probably do without a television, but it's beyond me to see myself without a telephone.
Well, I agree with you. And do you realize how the telephone has changed our life? A number of years ago, there were some immigrants who had come from Israel, and they just dropped in. And I was, you know, sort of surprised, and they said, oh, well, we didn't have phones. And that's what people did in Canada, too. I mean, at one time when there weren't phones, you just dropped in, you had calling cards. Our lifestyle has really changed because of telephones.
It's made the world so small, that we can communicate as far as we can.
And you realize that right here, there's one of the programs that I love, and it's one of our competitors, so I won't mention it. And he says, hello, vacuum land! And, you know, here we are. We're both in front of mics. And we don't know who's out there.
To.
We're talking. Mm. And, you know, when I think, I don't visualize anybody.
I do.
You do,
Lucy? Oh, I most certainly do. Oh, yes.
Oh, mm-hmm. Who do you visualize?
Oh, all sorts of people. I visualize faces of people I know.
Do you?
People I don't know. Oh, yes.
Well, I guess I'm really the kind of person they talk to. It's...
You feel vacuum land.
And you realize that I mean, kids, they think so differently than we do.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk to children, young children, the computer is very natural and very normal.
Very
they
natural.
Have a completely different way of thinking, of working.
Oh, of communicating.
Yes.
Of communicating.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I mean, they are so different. When he talked about in the olden days, people danced, they rang bells, they did things, and this is all so different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now I know that children can take calculators into their exams with them. I would never have visualized being able to take anything into an exam.
Yes, young children really think very differently. And what I was so interested in, when he talked about people watching TV going into an alpha, I don't know whether you've heard them say that TV is a cold medium, whereas radio is a warm medium.
Well, you're listening. Radio, you have to tune in so much more because you have to visualize what you're hearing. A television mesmerizes you. You don't have to work at it.
Well, I think we could talk for hours, but maybe we should move on.
Yes, we've got our restaurant to talk about. We've got a restaurant review that will leave you burning with curiosity.
Every couple of weeks, Evelyn Rotenberg and I get a big hunger and an even greater curiosity. And we started off with places. We'd like to find places for you that are healthy, that are attractive, and that aren't too expensive. So we spend a lot of time chatting to each other, and so far we've come up with some very interesting places. And we decided to try the Greek area. This is the first place, and wait until we tell you about it. We had fun, and here it comes. Evelyn and I went to a... Thank you.
Thank you.